My thought tonight dovetails into Brother Doug's thought that he had this morning. Is that correct? He talked about us having an advocate, someone to intercede for us before the judge, a mighty Father. And my thought lately has been a lot about how God hates sin. And I think Brother Doug even talked a little bit about that in Sunday school this morning. I got there just for a little bit of that. But I think we have become, you might say, a little bit, I'm going to speak for myself. We live in this world, and we see all the things going on, and we just kind of get, you might say, sin. But God hates what he sees going on around about us, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail about it, but what I've been thinking is, how did God deal with sin in the past? And that might be the thought I might put up here. How God dealt with sin in the past. I'm not a very good writer, sorry. This board, it slides on me. And you can kind of say in the past on there how God dealt with sin. And these are very familiar stories, but I want to look also at how God blessed those that listened to him. And we all know the story of Noah in Genesis, the 6th chapter. But what I want to pick up in that part of the story is God said that he looked upon the earth, and he said in the 6th chapter in the 3rd verse, and God said, "My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet as his days shall be 120 years. God was displeased, and he said, my spirit's not going to always strive with man. So we see all the sin and the wickedness going on around about us. Do you think God has that same manner and thought about our world today? My spirit is not going to always strive with man. Well, what does that mean? You know, when Jesus hung on the cross and he had all the sins of the world upon him, he said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And I've heard this explained before in the past from the old-time ministers. They said, God doesn't want to see sin, so his spirit lifts from the earth. In other words, God says, the world is so wicked, people are so sinful out there today, I don't want to see it. So God, his spirit is not always going to keep striving with man. And I'm talking about in the world around about. Because it's so wicked, he don't want to see it. He hates sin. We have to realize that. Brother Doug talked about that some this morning. God hates sin. And so sin separates us from God. And he says, my spirit's not going to always dwell or strive. I'm not going to always deal with man. And so then, but God saw a light. And I always like to think of this. I tell this to the children in children's meeting. God looks down and says, I see a light. I love little lights. And God looks down and he says, somebody is praying to me. I hear a voice. I hear a connection. And it was Noah. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. How did he do that? Living in such a sinful environment like we've got today. Well, I think this is one of the things. Noah was seeking God continually. He was not becoming complicit, like, oh, well, you know, if I pray, I pray. If I, you know, do God's will, I do it. No, he was specifically focused on, where is God in this? There's chaos all around about me. Where's God? And God said, I see Noah. Noah, he's my man. You know, and God chose Noah. And the other thing I want to pick up before we move on, I find so interesting how Noah was able to get his 3 sons to listen to him. Now you think about it. They'd never had a flood there before like that. And he tells his 3 grown sons, we're going to build a boat. And we're going to make this boat out here on the plain. And this is how God told me. And you know, we're all... If you're a parent, you know, children, How come, Dad? Why? Nobody else is building a boat. God told me to build a boat. He had to have lived before his children in such a way that they had confidence in him. And when Noah said, sons, get busy. We're going to build this boat. We're going to gather up the wood. We're going to start building. We're going to gather in animals. You think of all the work that took. They listened to their father. He had their confidence. So those are some things we can pick up from Noah. That Noah was connected. Sorry. Excuse me. Noah was connected to God, and he also had the confidence of his children. So Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and he was able to gather his sons and daughter-in-laws together, and he obeyed the Lord. And we know the story, how that the floods came, and Noah and the ark and all those in it were saved. I want to move on to another story. I want to move on to look about Lot. How did the Lord deal about Lot? We know the story how that Abraham and Lot separated because their flocks were both big. And Abraham said to his nephew, you pick whichever part you want, and I'll take the other. And Lot looked out, and he saw that the plains of Sodom and Gomorrah was good, that it was grassy. And so he said, I'll take that. I want those plains. And it was that he took that, but Sodom and Gomorrah was a very wicked town. They had a lot of evil and sin going on. A lot of the same kind of sin that we see today. In fact, that's where the term Sodomite comes from, because they live so wicked. I wonder why, and this is in Genesis, if you want to turn to it, it's in Genesis 18. I wonder why God did not speak directly to Lot. Remember how it was? The two angels came to Abraham and Sarah, and was talking to Abraham, and they told Abraham, this is the last part of, the last part of 18, Genesis 18. And the angel was telling Abraham, you're going to have a son, and it'll be by Sarah. And Sarah laughed. And then the two angels went on to tell Abraham, they said, and all the evil and the wickedness of Sodom and Gomorrah, it has come into the ears of the Lord, and he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. God didn't tell Lot. I wonder why God didn't say that to Lot. Instead, he told it to Abraham. It must have been a different kind of person Lot was than Noah, because if Lot had been in touch with God as Noah had been, well, God should have just sent those angels right to Lot and said, Lot, we're going to destroy the place. But instead, it was Abraham first. And Abraham, after the angels left, in the 23rd verse of Genesis 18, Abraham drew near, and he began to reason with the Lord. And he said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? This passage is very precious to me, because I've used it different times in this manner, and reasoning with the Lord. Lord, if you can work this out in such a way, then I know. You know, I've done that before, different scenarios, and then I commit it to the Lord. Just work it out, Lord. I know you can help work this out. I don't know the how answer to the problem, but I do know this, Lord. I want your righteousness to prevail. And those that are seeking you, in a situation, Lord, I want you to deal with hearts that will draw them the closest to you. Sometimes our reasoning, it looks like, this is the best way to do it, Lord. Just do it this way and everybody will be blessed. But sometimes the Lord says, no, I want to do it this other way and draw souls closer to me through it. Sometimes suffering is the way the Lord takes us, but we don't want it. Our flesh pulls away. You know, if I had my way, I would say, don't ever let my children suffer. Don't let, you know, don't let anything happen bad. And that's really, you know, our desires. And I'm not, but yet the Lord sometimes says, sometimes my way is higher than yours and it's better. And it may not be the way you wish, but it's my way. Well, anyway, Abraham was praying over Sodom and Gomorrah. And he came down to how many? He said, in the very last part. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet this once. Peradventure there be 10 be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. So Abraham got the Lord to agree, if there were 10 people in that town of Sodom and Gomorrah, that he would not destroy it for 10 people. That's a very small percentage compared to how many people there were there. But the Lord could not even find 10. So it was, that's when the Lord sent the angels to Lot's place. And Lot was there at his position at the gate. And he was really just living there, watching the sins of the people. And evidently, he had not been praying about his family. He had not been asking the Lord, why are these people, what can I do to change them? Or I need to tell my family not to get involved in all these sins. Because, I am sorry. Sorry. Lot had not even talked to his family, evidently, about the Lord. Because whenever the angels came to him, he realized that they needed a place to stay because the place was so wicked. But when he tried to talk to his family, well, the men of the town, let's go on into the story, the men of the town came around his house after he brought the angels in, and they wanted to do harm to him. And Lot said no, and reasoned with the men, they wouldn't reason, and God had to put a blindness on the men so they would not even bother the house there where the men were in Lot's house. But whenever the angels told Lot, go and talk to your children and tell your children, I'm going to destroy this place. God's going to send fire and brimstone. Go tell your children. What did his children do? You can read it there in the 19th chapter of Genesis. They didn't want to hear it. Evidently, Lot had not lived before his children a life that kept their confidence that he was in connection with God. He hadn't even heard directly from God at first. It was actually his uncle Abraham that had pled for him. So you see the difference there? God was not able to bring out all of Lot's family because Lot had not got his family under his, in his confidence. They just didn't listen to him. It says in the Bible that when he went and told his children in the night there, God's going to destroy this place, we got to flee, they laughed at him as a man making mockery. They wouldn't listen. So there was a difference there, but God's judgment still came down. And Lot and his two daughters and his wife, they fled in the early morning. And the angels even had to take a hold of their hand and tell them, hurry. And he said, don't look back. The angel said, do not look back. And we know the famous part of how Lot's wife, what did she do? She looked back and she became a pillar of salt. One time the Lord spoke to me, and I was going through some battles and all, and he said, you can't have the heart of Lot's wife. I thought, what? He said, in order to live for me and not to be persuaded and influenced by the sins of this world, you cannot have a Lot's wife heart. And it really struck me hard because in my thinking, I live very humble. I don't have a lot of earthly possessions and all. And so I got to thinking, what was Lot's wife looking back to? Was she looking back to her house? Was she looking back to her garden, her all her pretty dishes and her clothes and all? What was Lot's wife looking back at? What would you think? All those children that she had given birth to that had not listened to their father when he said, let's leave. Your mother's heart would be looking back, wouldn't it? You'd say, oh God, there's fire, and I've got children. I've got children back there. Her mother's heart, I don't think, was looking at that for the house, looking back to see what happened to her house. I think her mother's heart was looking back to think, what's happening with my children? And that has been a challenge to me. You know, our responsibility is, children, flee from the sins of this world. Don't get all involved in them, and don't get so self-satisfied that the world pulls at you whenever they're going the wrong way. Because the truth is, the love of money is a lot of the root of evil. And when we become involved in the world's affairs, in many ways, we can get so at ease that we're forgetting that those and worldly things are pulling us in and taken away from our spiritual reasoning. And so that's what we can learn from that story of Lot's wife and whenever God dealt with Sodom and Gomorrah, he destroyed them because there was a lot of sins going on there that we see in our world today. Let's go to the Tower of Babel in Genesis, the 11th chapter. That happened a little before Lot and Abraham. But here's another lesson. In Genesis 11th chapter, it says, and the whole earth was one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And it says here, something very interesting, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men builded. The Lord noticed it. He came down. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing shall be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of the earth, of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. So the Lord saw that they were doing something that displeased him. Now it doesn't say that they were really involved in a real terrible, grievous sin. Their thoughts were, we're going to build this great big tower, and we're going to reach up to the sky, and we're going to be able to keep ourselves together, unified. And it was sort of a desire to be what? To be self-sufficient. We'll just take care of ourselves, and we'll be able to take care of the needs and not have to worry about God. We'll be able to, you know, be self-sufficient. We're going to build this tower so that it will reach to the heaven, and we'll make ourselves a name. And what was it? One of the temptations that the serpent said to Eve, if you eat of this fruit, you will become as what? God, that you will know good and evil. And that's always been a temptation to mankind. Be self-sufficient, and I can take care of myself. I know, and I can take care of what I need. Being self-sufficient. And I don't see here that God was saying, they're doing a lot of wicked, wicked things. It was just, he was displeased in their manner of thinking, we're going to be great, mighty, powerful, and self-sufficient. And what did he do? He confounded their language, and he scattered them all abroad. upon the face of the earth. The Lord wasn't pleased with that. He wants mankind to acknowledge him, the great creator. He wants mankind to accept his ways and not become self-sufficient in ourselves, thinking, you know, I can take care of it. I'm my own master, you know, I can take care of this. And this is a very contrary thinking in our society today. In our society today, and it was even said to me just lately by a child, you got to believe in yourself. You have to believe in yourself, and you got to know what you want and go for it. Now, that's our world today. And yet, it is really contrary to God's plan. God says, pray to me. Come to me, like Noah did. Seek for me. Whenever everybody else about you is all in their busy world of hubdub and they think they've got everything going their way, seek my way. Don't get involved and get self-sufficient of your own self, but humble your heart to me like Noah did. In the New Testament, we will find Jesus referred to Noah. He said, in the days as it was in the day of Noah, so shall it be in the days when men will be worse and worse. It's in Matthew. And he warned us in that passage there about how the people were wicked in the days of Noah. And he told us some warnings in there. In Matthew, the 24th chapter, in the 36th verse, Jesus is talking here to the disciples, and he said, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as in the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that there were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Now he's telling here about when he comes back again. I'm going to leave you, he was telling the disciples, but when I come back again, the earth will be wicked just like it was in the days of Noah. And it said it was there was violence and evil imaginations all in their mind. We see all these things. We see it taking place. But he said, people were just going about their everyday life. And they didn't realize that there was going to be a flood. And that's what he said is going to happen again when I come back. And this passage right here is very misunderstood, where it says, then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two shall be grinding at the mill, and the one shall be taken and the other left. That's not talking about a rapture. That's just talking about two women working, and one's going to be saved and one's not. Two's going to be taken together in the field, one's going to be saved and one not. We'll go to that in just a little bit. But I want to go into this. It says, watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. If you are aware that there's a thief in the neighborhood, you might be more alert to making sure the doors are latched, you know, that your door is locked, that your windows are. You might be even awake listening some if you know that there's a thief in the neighborhood. But if you feel like everything's well and there's not much evil or much harm around you, take your ease. But Jesus said, no, watch, watch, be careful. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant, whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Now I take that spiritually. Ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season. Now we can take that as feeding them physical food, but I take that as feeding them spiritual food. The Bible tells us in Deuteronomy that you should teach your children when you rise up in the morning and when you go down through the day and when you go to bed at night, something of that effect in the passage. And I think this is talking, in my thinking, about spiritually. Teach your children, teach people in your family, those around about you, give them meat. In other words, live your life that people can feed from your life and draw to their good spiritually. Live a life that when people are with you, they know there's something different about that person. There's something in their manner. They've got something about them that is different that I want. And that is giving meat, spiritual meat to people, where they can say, would you pray for me? Are you a Christian? What church do you go to? We've probably all heard those questions. And people will say, I had a grandmother that used to believe in God, or I know somebody that used to go to that church, or I've had different incidents like that. And that is giving meat out to others and also to our own household. Take time in the daily affairs of life. Listen. When people are around you, listen to the conversation. I've had to train myself to not be so job-oriented. Like, I get my little list on here and I think, okay, I got to do this. But the Lord says to me, no. When you're in a waiting room, I take elder people to the doctor's office. When you're in that waiting room and you're in there and you hear people talk, listen to what they're saying. And sometimes you can insert in their conversation something about the Lord. Whenever you're with other people, listen, and maybe you'll have an opportunity to say something about the Lord to those people. I think that's what Noah was, a man like that. But I don't think Lot was. I think Lot was one that sat at the gate, and it said he vexed his soul all day long with the sins of the people around about him. But he never really offered or told them about God. Maybe he himself wasn't living the way he should. But the Lord says here in this passage, this is his warning, and he's telling his disciples here, watch and be ready. He said, who's faithful and wise? It's the one that has rule over his own household, and he's able to give them meat in due season. Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. And then here is the warning. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I take that again in a spiritual way. I'm not looking at that this time as in physically getting drunk, but I'm looking at that in a way of smiting his fellow servants and eat and drink with the drunken. We're in a spiritual warfare, and I know we all realize it. And one of the ways that the enemy likes to decrease our power in prayer is to cause divisions among us. And he's very sly at it. He's very sly at making us have hurt feelings, and we all have feelings. He's very sly at making us think negative thoughts of somebody. He's very sly at making us feel, well, what's the use? People really don't care if I come to church. People really don't care about me. That's the trick of the enemy. And he's very sly at twisting things to make it look like, somebody has said something bad about you. Not long ago, I'll try to keep this where it's not, but a person requested prayer for somebody in another congregation, and they did it in good meaning. But the word got back to the person that she had requested prayer for, that she had said something negative about her. And so the person in the other congregation had an ill will feeling about the one that had requested prayer for her and had done it in good intentions. And so this one carried an attitude. And so whenever the person that requested prayer for that one would speak to her, she'd say, "I'm doing fine. I'm just doing fine." And she'd walk on. And the one that requested prayer thought, "What did I do to her to make her have that attitude? I didn't do anything." And the one that finally broke it was a friend said something and got the misunderstanding worked out. And then the one that had had the misunderstanding said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And she was Christian enough, had enough God in her to come and apologize to the one that had requested prayer for her. And they worked it all out. And they got it all solved. But that's what I'm talking about, how the devil can work to make fellow servants smite one another. And then what happens is, when you come together to pray, there's a little misunderstanding and there's not a complete unity there. And so then whenever there's a prayer offered, there's these little thoughts, "Well, I don't have confidence in his prayer. I don't have confidence in her prayer." You understand what I'm saying? And so that's how the devil can cause people in the last days to rise up and smite one another. There's another way too. There can be other ways of misunderstanding too. There's a lot of different ways. But what I want us to see is the Lord told us that in the last days there'll be a lot of evil round about us. And then that can make us not only become lukewarm in our spiritual life, if we're not careful, because we see it so much around about us, but it can also make us critical of one another. It can make us feel, "Well, why doesn't he live where he should be? Why isn't..." The devil loves to make critical comments in our ear about brothers and sisters, smiting one another. And why am I bringing this out? Because as people of God, I don't see the devil making any of us in here go down to the bar and go down into that bar down this road and get a glass of liquor and drink it. I don't see any of us doing that. But I do see the devil trying to cause divisions in the last days where we're not really in tune with him. And then whenever he speaks, we're not ready like Noah, because we've got some things there in our household that's not right. We want to keep things cleared up. And sometimes the people that we're closest to, that we have the most contact with, are the ones that we can sometimes have a little more of a friction with sometimes, because we're with them all the time. But the Lord wants us to keep those things clear. Watch and pray. Watch and pray and be ready. Because we know, we see all the evil around about us. We know that the Lord's not pleased with it. He said his spirit's not going to always strive with man. He's not going to always deal with people because of their hearts being so wicked. But the Lord is looking down and he's looking for lights. Light here. I see a child of God here, a connection here, a connection there. I don't know how many. That's what I've prayed sometimes before the Lord. Lord, how long? How many more people do we need on the face of this earth? What is the percentage that you will keep this earth spinning for? If you see, I don't know, how many billion people are on the earth? How many is it? 6 billion, somebody? How many? 6 or 7 billion? About 7 billion? Okay, and I haven't had time, I'm not a good mathematician. But if you figure it down, and I've asked the Lord, what percentage in Guthrie? What percentage of people? If you see 5% of people in Guthrie living for you? If you see 5% in Oklahoma City? I mean, I'm just thinking, Lord, when it comes down to it, true people that's really connected, like Noah, that had his household in order, people that were really seeking you, how many people is it, Lord, that you're looking for on the face of this earth before you're going to destroy it? Because we hear all these things We all hear it, of what's happening, the globalists and all their plans, and oh, I don't even want to go into it. We've probably all heard it, their plans of what they're going to do to this earth, and they think, even Bill Gates boasted one time he could block the sun. They think they're gods, like the Tower of Babel. They think that they're, you know, they're building up to God, and they're the gods of this earth, and they can do what they please. God's not pleased with that. He's going to bring them down. But how long will it be? How many people is God looking at this earth and saying, I'm sparing the earth because I see there's 5% here, there's 5% there, there's 10% here. What is he seeing, you know? Because he's keeping this earth still going for some reason. And I want to be in that percentage that the Lord says, I'm sparing the earth because there's a light there, right here, I see it, at 175 West Simpson. I see a light there. I see a light at this house. I see a light. So I'm sparing the earth for these lights, for this salt. See, the salt of the earth. We don't want to lose our savor because he said, Jesus said that in Matthew, that if the salt loses its savor, that's been a challenge to me many, many times. Matthew 5 and 18, or 13, ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out, and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. We're the salt of the earth. And if the salt loses its savor, what do you salt with? You can't substitute salt. Salt is salt. Now, there's some things you can substitute. You can make buttermilk with vinegar and water. Just put some vinegar in, not water, but milk. Put vinegar in milk and you got buttermilk, kind of like. You can substitute some things, but you cannot substitute salt. If you don't have salty, you can't substitute anything for it. And that's what Jesus is saying. So, if we, who are the light of the world, lose our light, if we lose our saltiness, God's going to be displeased over, and we'll lose our blessing. We will not be part of the redeemed if we lose our saltiness, but we'll also, he's looking for that. He's looking for us to be the light and to be the salt. That's his plan. That's his reasoning for keeping the earth going. It's not because of all the people out there in sin. His mercy is extended to them, but as we see it getting more and more wicked, I think his spirit, he looks for those that are hungry for him, but I think he's lifting his spirit. Okay, just one more place in John 15 and 22. This is where Jesus, John 15 and 22, where Jesus is talking about, these passages are very precious because he was giving the last commands to his disciples, and he told them, maybe starting in 15 and 20, remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin. But now they have both seen and hated both me and my Father. And what he's telling the disciples here is, and Paul talks about it in Romans in a passage too, they would not have known how sinful they were if Jesus had not come and exposed their sin. So when Jesus came to the earth the first time and he exposed the sins of the people. When people have their sin exposed, they've got two choices. Either they're going to bow to Jesus and accept his pardon and forgiveness for sin, or they're going to reject and become harder. And when they do that, then the one that exposed their sin, they're going to push on. They're going to put pressure. Hush, hush, be quiet. I don't want to hear it. I don't want my sin exposed. Be quiet. And so Jesus is saying, they crucified me because I exposed their sin. So, well, they hadn't yet, but that's what he was telling them they will do. They're going to crucify me. So, don't think they will not persecute you when you expose their sin. So when you live righteous for the Lord, you can expect people to push at you and push at you, push you down and tell you, you know, they, you know, push you down, try to, or they might be hungry and want to know more. There's two responses people will have. They will either receive or reject. And because you're a light, an ambassador, you're a person representing Christ, they will do that to you. In other words, if you live a righteous life and you won't lie, and those others in the company are lying and stealing or cheating, they're going to try to make you look bad because you're exposing their sin. Don't give up. Stay true to the Lord. You may have to find another place to work or whatever, but I'm trying to bring this example out to encourage us. Stay true to the Lord. Stay true to his word. Stay true like Noah did in those evil days. Keep your watch. Keep your connection with the Lord. Because the evildoers are reversing today truth and making it look bad. And they're taking the truth and trying to reverse it and make it look bad. We are wise about their deception, their deceitfulness. But they are going to do that persecution to those that stand for truth, because truth exposes their evil. And they will try to then put you out. That's why we need to band together as a people and have confidence in one another. And don't let the enemy cause us to smite one another. In other words, if I hear a report about a brother, and I hear that he's done something bad, and I hear it through the world, I'm going to go to that brother and say, I don't believe what I heard was true. Oh, no, it's not true. Good, let's pray together. Because the world is doing all they can right now to make good people look bad and make evil people seem like they're good, they're doing good, they're coming out of the closet. They're finally free, these bad people. And do you understand? And so we're going to have to keep our confidence in one another. Don't let the enemy take away our confidence in one another. We meet together, we sing together, we pray together. We're a family. We're the family of God. So keep our unity together. Don't let the enemy make inroads of ill will or things like that, hurt feelings. Work them out and keep our unity together as a family. Keep our household as our own personal household, as a family of God. We keep together because there's power in prayer, and the devil knows it. There's power there when we are united. And so that's what Jesus is saying. He told his disciples, stay together. I've made you my friends. I've been here with you. Keep united and work together. And they did. You'll read that in Acts. They had differences a lot of times. Peter, one time, he came in an assembly and he wouldn't eat with the Gentiles because Paul brought him in. But they had to have their discussion and they finally worked it out. And then they were able to eat together. They were united. And also the sheet came down and tagged Peter also. Remember the story of the sheet coming down with the unclean items and or animals, and God told him to eat of the unclean, and then later he went to the centurion's house. So God dealt with Peter. There has to be unity in God's people. And we have to keep our house together because the devil is working hard over time to cause divisions and to cause strife and to cause people to just give up. And, you know, like, I've done everything. It's so wicked. It's just so wicked. But the Lord says, watch and pray because I'm coming back. You don't know when. He didn't tell us the time, but he did say, watch and pray. Hebrews, the third chapter, I'm just done, this will be the last. In Hebrews, the third chapter, he tells us here to exhort one another in prayer, to be faithful, to assemble ourselves together as much as possible. That's the other thing that the enemy wants to try to do. He wants to cause people to, oh well, why go to church? You know, I'm tired, and the devil wants to work on us to make us feel that it's not that important to meet together. But it is important. In Hebrews, the third chapter and the 13th verse, it says, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened to the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation. For some, when they had heard, did provoke, howbeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. He's going on to talk about how they grieved the Lord for 40 years. We heard a little bit about that this morning, I believe. But the Lord wants us to exhort one another to good works, encourage each other. We all have our battles. We don't know what our brother or sister might be going through. But keep our confidence in one another and encourage one another and let each other know how much we appreciate one another. If there's a misunderstanding, take care of that. The Bible even tells us in Matthew, if you know your brother has aught against you, go to that brother. And work that out before you bring your sacrifice to the Lord. And then there's another place a little farther that says, if you have aught against your brother, you go and work it out. It doesn't say you get on the phone and call out of people and ask them about it. It means take care of things, have confidence in one another so that you can go to each other and talk things over and work things out and not have anything there that would hinder prayer, unity of prayer, and also we want a unified force against the evil that's so round about us. The devil, as I said, is sly. He's been at his tricks for all these centuries, and he never sleeps. He's got workers working around the clock. So Lord, help us to keep our trust in him, to keep our confidence, first of all, in the Lord, and then in one another. Keep our households where we can visit, tell the children, tell our families about the Lord, that the Lord will look down upon us and say, I see a light. I see someone that I can trust, someone that I can have my confidence in that will be faithful to me, like Daniel was, who prayed at the open window, like the three Hebrew children were. When they were tested, the Lord is looking for that kind of confidence in people. Pray for me. I want to be what the Lord wants me to be. It's a message to me.